You know, 10 months ago, we made a decision to redefine our direction. We knew there would be ups and downs this season. We knew that we would encounter some things that were going to be difficult, and we did. With that said, I think we're in a better place today than we were at this time last year. And I think we have an opportunity to grow as an organization starting today.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
Levine, he goes right. Oh!
Stop it, Sampson! Did you not get the memo?
Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
Here's Enes Kanter, what are you doing? The finisher in New York City.
Your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
We're going to preach patience. Doesn't mean we're not going to be looking for ways to get better, but a lot of it's going to come internally. We need Zach LaVine to be a better basketball player. Chris Dunn to come back a better player. Lauri Markkanen, Bobby Portis, you go down the line. They have to put in the time and confident that they will.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day.
Like I said at the beginning, I feel better today about our direction and our position than I did a year ago.
Locked On Bulls. Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, writer of Bulls basketball and the NBA over at LockedOnBulls.com, and college hoops over at SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, writer of Bulls basketball and the NBA over at LockedOnBulls.com, and host of the 312 show on AM 1590 WCGO in Chicago. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, Facebook.com/LockedOnShibles, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Make sure you're following the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. Our friends over at Locked On Cubs are getting ready for the second half of the season. Bears training camp just started, so our friends over at Locked On Bears have all the coverage there. So go subscribe to both of those shows. Both fantastic hosts, and they'll give you great coverage like you're getting here. Text and voicemail line 331-979-1369. Your voicemails, your text messages, your reaction, your questions. We want all of it. 331-979-1369. Happy Friday, Matt. Are you going to be indulging in any of the festivities going on in the city of Chicago this weekend? It seems like there's a lot going on. Like, Chance is holding a 50th anniversary of the Special Olympics concert with him and Usher as the headlines this weekend at Northerly Island. You've got Pitchfork Festival, which is a staple in Chicago here now at Union Park. That's going on today through Sunday. There's a bunch of other things going on in the city. You partaking in any of that this weekend?
We'll see. What's up, Jordan? What's up, Bulls Nation? Yeah, that's like the fun part about Chicago in July. Every weekend, there are 8 trillion events because you have to slam everything into a short summer season in this crazy city. It's going to depend on whether or not I can get off the couch. I subbed in for my roommate's beach volleyball team last night down at North Avenue Beach, you know, one of those rec leagues. And I was pretty proud of my performance. And first time I played beach volleyball in at least a couple of years. And somewhere towards the end of the third game, I just felt the whole right side of my body, neck, shoulder, arm, when I was doing some overhand serve, I just felt it go. Like the rocket from Rookie of the Year, that last pitch he throws where he's like, stick a fork in me, I'm done. All of a sudden, I was like, well, I can't move the right side of my body, so let's go home. But let's stop at the Mexican joint and get some margaritas first because this really friggin' hurts. So we'll see. If I can get off my couch, I might go out and enjoy some of those Chicago festivities this weekend. But right now, it's not looking good. I'm already on 4 Advil this morning.
Well, if you want to indulge in some basketball this weekend, you know what's coming to town this weekend, don't you? Is LeVar Ball's JBA, which LaMelo Ball and D'Angelo Ball will be playing this weekend over at Wintrust Arena. And you know what? The tickets are still ridiculous price. Like $50 to $60 is what it's going for right now to attend all of the games. I thought about going to it, and I was like, this isn't like a walk-up, like $10 type of ticket.
With that $50 or $60 ticket, does that also allow you to punch LeVar Ball in the face? Because if that's included in the ticket price, then yeah, I'll go.
So all of that's going on. I might check out the JBA. It depends. I'm going to wait to see what I feel like.
tomorrow morning and decide whether I'm going to go to Grant Park for Pitchfork, or if I'm going to spend the money to go see Chance, or maybe I'll just go hang out at Wintrust Arena and see if I can get myself a picture with LeVar Ball. But we've got plenty of stuff to do here on today's show. I want to talk about Antonio Blakeney's contract and finally getting an NBA guaranteed contract, what he could do for the Bulls this season coming up. Also, want to make sure that we touch on some other stuff going around the NBA, the Kawhi Leonard news, the Marcus Smart news, those contracts being signed, those moves being made. We've got our friends over at Locked On Spurs and Locked On Celtics for a quick bit from both of those. You'll get their reaction there. And then we're going to finish up, too, with voicemails. We've got three really good voicemails that we've been left at the end of the week here, just kind of wrapping up Jabari Parker in general as far as his fit, his contract, and we're going to get into a ton of that stuff, but just want to wrap up the week with that. So three really good voicemails and a lot more in between, but let's start with Antonio Blakeney, Matt. I've said it multiple times over the last year that I felt like this kid has done everything possible to earn himself an NBA contract. And I said, I don't know if that's going to be with the Bulls, but if 29 other teams need a guy to sit on the reserve as their 10, 11, 12th guy on the bench, like, this guy did everything that he needed to do in order to guarantee himself an NBA contract. Like, when you put up a historical number in the G League at 32 points per game and you set the record in your rookie year there, I think you've earned yourself a way to an NBA contract. And I'm glad it's here with the Bulls, because it seems like just from watching Instagram videos and seeing tweets and just some of the pictures that have come out, it seems like he's developed really good relationships with guys in that locker room. So I think it's good. It's a good chance that the Bulls are taking on a low risk, low contract, and it could potentially end up being a positive.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. I think we were talking about Blakeney on one of our shows last week, and I was kind of saying about his summer league performance and then also the G League. Like, just because you can be a hero ball player and dominate the G League doesn't mean you can be an effective player at the NBA level. And some of the times last season when the Bulls did bring him up to the real squad on that two-way contract, he didn't look all that effective, especially being a backup point guard who could actually run an offense. That being said, that doesn't mean he can't be an effective spark plug scorer off the bench. And right now, with the other only option, as Jaron Grant has departed, and we're all fine with that, as far as backing up Chris Dunn and who's going to be running the point for the second unit on this squad in the 18-19 season, Paxson and Gar are both still, quote, really high on campaign and believe in him as the backup point guard, at least for now. And I don't know if you or I or anybody in Bulls Nation is sold on that idea. We did admit to maybe being a little too mean to campaign just because the trade that brought him here was so awful in itself as a trade, and his first stint two seasons ago looked pretty awful. We did actually, when he got minutes in the back end of last season, look less useless. So that being said, I mean, maybe campaign is a bit better at actually playing the point guard role and distributing. And we did see that at times late last season, he looked like a guy who could not only get to the basket, but distribute and find open looks for his teammates. I have less confidence in Blakeney being that kind of backup point guard, but sometimes all you need on your bench is a guy who can just come off the bench and get you buckets. And he can certainly do that in summer league. He can certainly do that in the G League. Now we'll see, and it'll be interesting to see where he winds up in Hoiberg's rotation and in training camp if he and campaign are actually competing for that backup point guard spot. But it makes perfect sense that the Bulls would do this as opposed to like going out and, you know, signing some other random backup point guard from the market right now, which is pretty much done.
Can I say one thing about campaign really quick? Because I saw something on Twitter yesterday that sparked kind of a thought for me. And it was specifically about JaVale McGee. And there was a guy who had said it's too bad because of Shaqtin a Fool that it basically made JaVale McGee, as far as the narrative goes about his game, saying that this guy's a clown, he can't play, all of these things that went into it. When
he was very effective for the Warriors in some of their playoff series.
Absolutely. And it's kind of disappointing because he's a serviceable big. He's a guy that can come off the bench and protect the rim. He can guard. He showed he can guard multiple positions and at times can get you buckets when you need it with that Warriors team. Like, look, the Warriors team is a generational talent team. So my point being here, though, is he brought it up that no matter what, whether JaVale McGee is good or not, that Shaqtin a Fool sort of narrative is always going to follow him. And I had to say the same thing about Cameron Payne. Like, no matter what Cameron...
And the pregame dancing?
Yes, it's the pregame dancing. It's the wheeling into media day on the little scooter. It's all of these things that I think Bulls fans have made up in the last 2 years as far as jokes go. Same with Oklahoma City, like his back end there, his last season there. I think all of that, no matter what Cameron Payne does, if he comes out and plays well, if he doesn't play well, there's always going to be jokes made about him. And that's kind of disappointing when you think about two guys that were taken in a lottery in JaVale McGee and Cameron Payne. So I feel like as much as JaVale McGee or Cameron Payne play well, those sort of narratives will follow them throughout their entire NBA careers and sort of does them a disservice. So I kind of have a little bit of sympathy for Cameron Payne, especially if he comes back and has a decent year as a point guard and a backup this year. And we'll see. And like you were talking about Antonio Blakeney and Cameron Payne, who could potentially play. I think if we're talking about a safer bet, I think Cameron Payne's probably your safer bet as a backup point guard. I'm just looking at what Antonio Blakeney did in the 19 games that he played. His defensive box plus minus was a minus 4.3, and his offensive box plus minus was a minus 3.2. Cameron Payne's was about average. His defensive numbers weren't as great, but he's definitely a scorer off the bench. He's a guy that's going to come out and get you buckets. We certainly saw that in the G League, certainly saw that in both summer league stints that he had last year and this year. So I think it's good. It's another young guy that you can go out there and find if he can find a groove. And hey, I'm cool with bringing as much young talent onto this roster and just seeing what you have next season and seeing if they can sort of mold themselves into a role on this team. But that was my point about Cameron Payne, though. Like, all of these narratives that follow him, whether he turns out to be a good NBA player or not, they're always going to follow him. If the similar way that JaVale McGee always has Shaqtin a Fool follow him.
Yeah, and I think maybe for that reason, the casual Bulls fan is probably leaning towards believing that Blakeney is a better player and more deserving of the backup point guard spot, because they say, oh my gosh, this guy averaged 32 points. Yeah, well, he averaged 32 points in the G League. And they see Cameron Payne still as the butt of an ugly joke, which was that trade where OKC just fleeced the Bulls. But I think right now, coming into training, or you know, coming into training camp in a month or so, I don't see a huge gap between Blakeney's ability to go get you buckets and the balanced not terribleness that we saw from campaign at the back end of last season. I don't necessarily see either of them having a big leg up on the other as far as who's going to be the primary backup to Chris Dunn at the point guard spot. It all depends on what Hoiberg wants his second unit to do, and who he wants to be scoring buckets for that second unit. And if he wants to put a bigger emphasis on getting buckets for Denzel and Bobby, maybe campaign's the guy who's going to feed them the ball, as opposed to he wants his second unit to be a score first point guard. That would give the edge to Blakeney. So we'll see what Hoiberg does. It's one of many decisions he's got to make coming into this season.
Yeah, I think Cameron Payne, too, as far as a three-point shooter goes off the bench, like last season in 25 games in 14 starts, I know it came at the end of the season, but he shot 38.5% from three. I look at that, and you know, I compare it to the 11 games he played with the Bulls in 2016-2017. His box plus minus was a minus 7.5 in 11 games. He turned that around in 25 games at the end of the season last year when he came back from an injury. He was a box plus minus of a minus 0.9 only. So an improvement there, both on the offense and defensive side of the ball, I think goes kind of underlooked. If Cameron Payne can come off the bench and be a guy in 15, 18, 20 minutes a night that can knock down a couple threes, kind of space things out for that second unit, I think it'll be fine. Like I told you too, I think I said this off air, if he can eliminate the embarrassing plays that end up in videos and on social media, eliminate those completely this season, I think he'll be all right. I think he's going to kind of slide.
Eliminate the Michael Carter Williams plays.
Yeah, oh God, yeah. So I think he's going to kind of slide under the radar. And so I guess that's just my perspective on what Cameron Payne can bring this season. And that's what I urge Bulls fans to think about in that way, is like the way JaVale McGee got kind of ostracized because of Shaqtin a Fool and made fun of. It's the same kind of thing with Cameron Payne, and I'm not saying that Cameron Payne's going to turn it on and light it up next season, but I'm going to give him a chance if he can stay healthy and see what he does, especially early on. And I think as far as an option goes, if you're picking between Blakeney and him, I'm glad Blakeney made the roster, but I think I'm going Cameron Payne as far as my backup point guard situation goes, especially early on next season.
Yeah, and at least now it's less laughable as far as the overbloated number of bad point guards that Fred has to work with, that it's like it's been in recent seasons. Now the most of the overcrowdedness is at the two forward spots. You know, at the wing you got the newly drafted Chandler Hutchison, you got Denzel, you got Jabari now in the fold, you got still Justin Holiday around before they can trade him, if they trade him, and then you got Bobby and Lowry at power forward. So like, as far as the balance of the roster, it made sense for the Bulls to add another point guard as opposed to adding another piece to the front court. So with that being the case, it makes perfect sense that they looked at a guy who already was in the organization and had, as you said earlier on, like a solid relationship with teammates already. And it makes sense now that Fred has more than one option outside of campaign and put a little bit of competition into that backup point guard spot.
We got to take a short break here on Locked On Bulls. When we come back, we're going to take a couple more voicemails as we lead into the weekend and also touch on the biggest news in the NBA so far. We're going to go to Boston. We're also going to go to San Antonio and get their insight as far as the quick reaction on Kawhi Leonard and also Marcus Smart re-signing in Boston. So stay right here with us at Locked On Bulls. Be back in 60 seconds.
Welcome back into Locked On Bulls. Matt Peck, Jordan Melle hanging out with you on Friday, bringing you into the weekend. And we had three voicemails that came in between yesterday and this morning that we wanted to get to before next week's Wednesday mailbag. So we're going to do that now. Let's jump in now with our regular caller, Mike.
What's up, guys? Mike again. Calling to weigh in on the Jabari Parker situation and get some thoughts from you guys specifically about a few things. So it's kind of maddening to me that, you know, we're going to have a team with Jabari and Zach LaVine, two totally inept defenders. But I don't know. I got to say, I like Jabari's attitude better than LaVine. And I think, you know, I don't know whether there's a hope for Jabari to be any sort of, you know, defender or not, but I will say this. Not being an expert on him, watching a lot of highlights in the last week or so, he is he's a hell of a scorer. I think we all know that. But he seems like he's got very good vision, and he doesn't seem like he's necessarily as selfish of a player as LaVine. And he doesn't seem like he's the guy that needs to have the ball for long periods of time in order to be effective. Like, I saw quite a few kind of like catch and release, real fast little passes from him, nice speeds, lobs, drive and dish, a lot of stuff like that from him. And if he's willing to play unselfishly like that, I really think that he could be a huge weapon for the Bulls. The other thing is don't underestimate the power of kind of the redemptive story. This guy's coming home. He's going to be motivated for that reason because he's always wanted to be in Chicago. He's a good guy, good head on his shoulders, smart guy. Imagine what it's like to be in a place where the world is expected of you as a number two pick, and no matter what you do, you underachieve. No matter what you do, you can't live up to it. And then you've got two unfortunate injuries, injuries that people do bounce back from, mind you. You know, it's just like no matter what you do, you can't catch a break. You don't get along with your coach gets ousted. Everybody sort of points fingers at you. They blame you. They make you feel like, you know, an awful way to leave the basketball arena, go home, and try to sleep at night. And that weighs on people. That's super taxing mentally. And I got to think that if there's ever going to be something that gets Jabari Parker working as hard as he can and gets Jabari Parker motivated, it has got to be a fresh start, the redemption story, and the ability to do it in front of his hometown. So I don't know, man. I'm really hoping that this is the greatest prove-it story ever, because I really want to see him succeed. But I'm curious what you guys think about the environment he came from and how much that kind of affected the aura around Jabari. That's it. Talk amongst yourselves. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for checking in, Mike. All right, Jordan. I'm going to touch on the back end of his sort of two-pronged voicemail and then pass it off to you. The whole don't underestimate the power of the coming home story. I don't buy that when it comes to how effective he may be on a basketball court. I don't. LeBron James coming home to Cleveland after spurning them 4 years ago to go join a super team in Miami with a team that was Hollywood as hell and went against everything that was the blue-collar city of Cleveland to redeem himself and give that title-hungry city what they had been longing for, that is one thing, and that is the power of coming home. Jabari Parker is not LeBron James. This is not Cleveland. And I'm sorry, if anything, I'm worried that Jabari Parker is going to try to, quote, do too much, hashtag doing too much, to prove that he actually is worth that $20 million that he's going to earn this season so that the Bulls will either pick up that option for 2019-2020, pay him $20 more million, or even further, renegotiate and sign him to some max deal. Parker knows that there are at least some portion of skeptics in this city right now that don't care about the fact that he's from Chicago, and I count myself among that faction of people. I don't care that Jabari's from Chicago. Good for you, buddy. Congrats on those high school state titles. How long ago was that now? Don't care. I care about my Chicago Bulls. So, if anything, I don't think that it's going to, like, turn Jabari into a better player on the court and a more efficient player on the court just because he's coming home to Chicago. To me, that means absolute diddly.
I think it adds more pressure than anything else. Like, look at
That's what I'm saying, and it might affect him trying to do too much.
And, like, look at Derrick Rose, and I know he said he's going to talk with Derrick Rose on what it means to this city specifically to come back and play. And I think about it too, like, besides LeBron James, going home is a ton of pressure. Like, you're from here, and especially with the Chicago fan base too, like, anybody from, it doesn't matter what fan base you're talking about either, the Cubs, the White Sox, the Blackhawks, the Bears, the Bulls. The fan base has an expectation when you come here and play, especially if you have a high all-star caliber mantra to you, and if you have potential to be something. When you come here, the expectation, and especially if you're a hometown kid, the expectation is 10 times larger than it should be. And while that's not really fair to put on Jabari Parker or anybody who's from Chicago to come back here and play, it literally comes with coming here and making the decision to play here. Derrick Rose knows at times, even when he was at his highest of highs at the MVP level, everybody loved him here. But even how the fan base turned on him after 2014, 2015, you know, when they cleared him medically to come back and play in the playoffs, and then he decided not to, and then he gets hurt 10 games into the regular season in the next year. So the pressure and, like, how the fan base turned on Derrick Rose for not coming back during that playoff stretch, it can happen pretty quickly. So the pressure is immense. I want to touch on the former part of his question, though, and being a good catch-and-shoot player. I talked about this briefly, I think, on Tuesday or Wednesday's episode, but I wanted to dive deeper into the stats. So when I mentioned that either Zach LaVine or Jabari Parker need to pick and decide who's going to become the better catch-and-shoot player, let me just remind you of what Zach LaVine and Jabari Parker's numbers were on catch-and-shoot balls last year. So Zach LaVine, he averaged 1.8 catch-and-shoot balls last year with the Bulls. All of those came at the three-point line. 33.3% from three-point on catch-and-shoot balls. So that's not very good.
I was going to say, like, and a lot of those where he made them off the dribble and his off-the-dribble shot percentage was better were those quote-unquote bad shots or difficult shots where he's shooting over somebody and, like, shooting off balance and, like, falling back. He had a better percentage on those kind of shots than on catch-and-shoots, which is not great.
Yeah, so, like, the fact that Zach LaVine isn't a good catch-and-shoot player, and then you pair him alongside Jabari Parker, like, I'm not saying that it can't work, but the idea that you're going to come down on most offensive possessions when Jabari or Zach LaVine are looking for the ball, they're going to be playing in isolation. You look at Jabari Parker's numbers from last season with the Milwaukee Bucks on his catch-and-shoot percentage. 2.8 field goals attempted on catch-and-shoots last year. Jabari Parker averaged 10.7 field goal attempts last season. So you're talking about, what, 20% of his shots being on catch-and-shoot? His numbers there, 43% on catch-and-shoot, not too bad. Two of those shots per game came from the three-point line, and he was shooting 41.3%. So that's actually pretty good. If Jabari Parker can be a good catch-and-shoot three-point player on two or three attempts per game, that's good for Parker. But I'm a little bit more nervous about Zach LaVine. Like, to be the type of athletic shooter that he needs to be and the offensive player that he needs to be, like, one of these guys is going to have to decide, all right, I'm going to take more catch and shoot shots than you are, and we're going to let you run with the isolation, try to spread things out. I think it's going to be tough. Both guys want the ball in their hands and want to be able to create by themselves. Neither of those guys have come out of college or in their first couple of years in the NBA have shown that they can be guys that can play effectively off the ball. And so offensively, I think there's going to be a little bit of a struggle at the beginning of the season to see which guy can become that better player off the ball. And I don't know if this is going to work or not, but those are the numbers right there. You've got two guys that were 6th, 7th, 8th on their team as far as catch and shoot goes per game. That's not good when you're talking about two of your players that you want to be offensive leaders on this team.
Yeah, it's fair. And we should also mention, though, while having this conversation, that when it comes to the 82-game season that we have coming up in a couple of months, it's not like once LaVine and Parker kind of figure out how to play with one another, hopefully, that both of them will become entrenched in that role. Where, like, one of them's going to be breaking down defenses off the dribble and one of them's going to be a catch-and-shoot guy. Based on who the Bulls are playing on a nightly basis and the matchups that Hoiberg sees as advantageous for either of those guys, they can kind of hopefully, ideally, shift in and out of those two roles, where one night LaVine is the one being the ball handler, breaking guys down off the dribble, and Parker is increasing that 3-point attempt percentage and increasing that 3-point make percentage. And then the other night, it's Parker breaking guys down off the dribble and hitting LaVine, who hopefully we can see in this upcoming season can actually improve upon those catch and shoot numbers.
Just one more thing before we get to the next voicemail. Cameron Payne in 24 games last season, 1.6 field goals attempted on catch and shoot. All of those coming from the three. Shot 43.9% on those. Zach LaVine, 1.8 attempts from three on a catch and shoot, 33.3%. So Zach LaVine is definitely has a lot to prove as far as not only being a catch and shoot player, but also shooting from a high clip at the 3-point line. Now, we're both getting healthy seasons coming back from, hopefully, cross our fingers, from Jabari Parker and Zach LaVine. So I'm hoping for major improvements, but there's going to be some struggle. Like, I think on paper, this team looks great, and it's going to be a lot of fun on paper, but you're going to see it early on in the season. You're going to see a struggle to see how this all builds together and how they mesh things together. And you need Parker and you need LaVine to be good players, not only on the ball, but off the ball offensively.
So your takeaway from that was Zach LaVine, not a very good catch and shoot 3-point shooter. My takeaway was all hail campaign. Clearly, I jest.
All right, let's get to the next voicemail. This is...
What's up, Matt? What's up, Jordan? What's up, Bulls Nation? This is Mike in Chicago calling, and I just wanted to talk real quickly about kind of weighing in on everything that you guys have been talking about with these Jabari Parker and Zach LaVine signings. And I understand everything that you guys have been saying about the Bulls maybe not having a good fit, maybe Jabari is better at the four and at Lowry's position, maybe them being awful on defense. I get all that. But I just wanted to talk real quick about my take on philosophically where the Bulls are at in this rebuild. And I think that it's really similar to the Oklahoma City Thunder. So the Thunder in the late 2000s drafted Russell Westbrook, Kevin Durant, and James Harden. And even though they were young, they went to the finals in 2012 and almost beat the almighty Miami Heat. And then since then, they've lost some of their superstars, maybe, namely Durant and Harden, and now they are relying on Russell Westbrook. And look at what they've done. They've had to go over $100 million into the luxury tax this year just to bring a secondary player around him. And they have a way worse team now with Paul George and Russell Westbrook alone. And they're paying way, way more for it. So I think what the Bulls are doing is stacking up young assets. Every single one of those guys was a lottery pick at some point in his career. And they're hoping that it'll work out. And I think that they are trying to be a lot more like the Sixers, where even though they took some swings and misses on Nerlens Noel, Jahlil Okafor, they were able to accumulate two young guys that are in the primes of their career. And I think that's what the Bulls are hoping to do. You know, Zach LaVine's not signed to an atrocious deal. You can trade that if it's not working out. Jabari Parker's on a one-year deal. Chris Dunn's contract is up after this year. But they're hoping. They're hoping that Wendell Carter, Zach LaVine, Lauri Markkanen, and any one of those players becomes a superstar, and hopefully in a couple of years they can sign some pieces around that, much like the Sixers are doing with their signing. So I really like what the Bulls are doing from a philosophical standpoint. I think that's where they're going in their rebuild, and I just want to hear your guys' thoughts. So, yeah, I'd be interested to just hear a little bit more about what you think about relying on multiple potential superstars rather than just one definite one or, you know, couple that are in the later stages of their careers. All right. Love the show, guys. Love to hear your response.
All right. There's a lot going on in this voicemail. And thanks again to Mike for calling in and leaving us this, because I did sort of a lazy comparison the last few days, just talking about how the Bulls are in position, sort of like it aligns to the Houston Rockets and how they were able to acquire James Harden. This is interesting, but also this is I feel like this is a far stretch comparison. Think about where Russell Westbrook, James Harden, Kevin Durant, and even Serge Ibaka at this time were drafted. Russell Westbrook was what, pick number 4? James Harden was pick number 3. Kevin Durant was pick number 2. Serge Ibaka was pick number 23. The Oklahoma City Thunder had a really, really, really solid draft history over those 5 years. And you could talk about even after those stars left and they were able to draft Steven Adams and what he's turned into already. To me, this is completely different from what the Bulls have in progress right now. Russell Westbrook went healthy and out there, and now even with Durant and with Harden leaving, like, Russell Westbrook's a top 10 player in this league. Some people would argue that he's a top 5 player in this league. So the Oklahoma City Thunder, I think, is a little bit of a weird comparison to what the Bulls are doing now. I can kind of see what you're saying as far as acquiring as much young talent as possible and seeing what you have in those guys. But, I mean, Oklahoma City is kind of a rare case. They hit on all three of those guys. And in some cases, you could talk about Serge Ibaka being a hit too as well. So I look at that and I say, like, you're holding really high expectations for guys that were picked at number 7 in Wendell Carter and also Lauri Markkanen. And you're also putting a lot of faith in Zach LaVine, who was taken at the back end of the lottery, and Jabari Parker, who at number 2 would probably be your best case as far as arguing this. But I take the draft class. Once you're 2-3 years in, and even after your rookie contract, where you got drafted has no bearing, for me at least, on how I evaluate some games. So the value in somebody saying, oh, he was a former lottery pick, all of this, well, if they've got 3 or 4 seasons in the NBA already, like, you can't, I don't really use that as a way to either say he's got an advantage or a disadvantage. What do you think about this Oklahoma City Thunder comparison? And after 2 stars had left, I don't see it. I'm trying here, but I don't see it.
Well, and I, no offense to Mike, but I'm not exactly sure what point he's trying to make. Like, that, okay, so in an ideal world, a team like the Thunder hits and draft 3 superstars in the span of a couple of years, and they didn't win a title. They got close. They made it to the finals 1 year, came 1 win away from getting back to the finals a different year. But so what's your point? Like, well, now they tried to keep those superstar draft picks together. They couldn't. Now 2 of them are gone. And look where they are. The Thunder are no closer to winning a title than the Bulls are right now. Or maybe in Mike's case, maybe a little bit, which is true. And as far as just the Bulls collecting young assets, and maybe none of them are superstar draft picks that they're tacking on one after the other, but he likes the addition of Parker because take a chance on accumulating young assets. And who knows, just because you draft guys that turn out to be superstars doesn't mean that you're guaranteed to keep those superstars and win titles. My big takeaway from this strange comparison is, okay, yeah, it didn't work out for the Thunder, even though they got really lucky and drafted 3 superstars or guys that turned out to be superstars. Tell me, Mike, when's the last time an NBA team without a superstar on its roster won a title? Because in my mind, you got to go back to the 2004 Detroit Pistons. That was a good team. They had some what you could call stars on that team. Chauncey Billups, Ben Wallace in his prime, Tayshaun Prince in his prime, Rip Hamilton in his prime. But none of them were superstars. So you're talking about 14 years of whichever NBA team hoisted the Larry O'Brien trophy had at least one superstar on their team. So if you're trying to have an optimistic spin here where the Bulls might not have any superstars right now, like a draft pick that turns into a Westbrook or a Harden or a KD, they're still collecting young assets and they got something good going here. I wouldn't necessarily disagree with the overall optimism of, yeah, the Bulls have managed to collect some young assets. But if the argument is, well, look, even if you get 3 back-to-back-to-back drafty superstars, it doesn't guarantee a title, To me, that's a little misguided.
I think the only other team, too, that you could think about, and this team even had one superstar. I mean, yeah, he was in the back end of his prime, but...
Is Dirk in the Mavs?
Yep, in 2011.
Yeah, I would still count 2011 Dirk as a superstar, though. Like, he was insane in those playoffs.
But, like you said, you're not building your team to be the outlier of a NBA championship.
Right.
You're building your team to try and be there for 4 or 5 years. And look, like, your comparison of OKC is also what Golden State has done. They've built through the draft. They were able to be flexible enough where the guys that they did draft ended up being stars. They were flexible enough to be able to bring in Kevin Durant because those guys were on such good deals. And that's why Matt and I are kind of confused here. Like, we were confused why they brought Parker in and what they had said before and saying they want to build through the draft like some of these other teams have. And then they turned around and signed Jabari Parker with 2 ACL injuries. I get it, he's still young, but a one-year deal, like, my biggest thing, my biggest hit, and I think this is probably the most likely scenario, is Jabari Parker doesn't have a bad year next year, but he also doesn't have, like, an elite-level year where you say you feel comfortable signing him to a long-term deal.
That's what I'm saying, man. That's what I'm saying. The Bulls are going to have to face a decision a year from now after a so-so year from Parker where they say, all right, do we pick up a 20 mil option, or do we re-sign this guy to even more money to keep him in town because we want to believe that he's worth the money? They just went through that decision with Zach LaVine, and it wasn't pretty, and Everybody feels really uneasy about it. And I'm sure that the Bulls front office are included among those who didn't feel great giving Zach LaVine that much money.
Parker plays really well, plays at an elite level next year, stays healthy. $20 million, you're not getting him back on a long-term deal at $20 million. Like, that's the starting point. Like, if Parker can get paid after 2 ACL injuries, only 31 games back last season, and he can get paid $20 million with an option for next year at $20 million, you're, like, he's starting the negotiations at $20 million. And so, to me, like, people want big-time free agents to come here, whether it's in a trade or viable via free agency. That can't happen if Parker comes back on a long-term deal. If they do that and Parker plays at an elite level, they believe in him, LaVine has a nice year, this is the squad we're looking at going forward. You probably get some role players in there, but $20 million next year on that cap hit, you still have to sign Bobby Portis. You have to make a decision on him. You've got to make a decision on Justin Holiday. Some of these other guys, too, that are part of your rotation. And that, where does that leave you to bring on a superstar? It doesn't. So to me, it's going to be a difficult decision. Like you said, I think you could compare it to the Zach LaVine decision this summer. Like, it's going to probably be even more difficult. Does he have, like, sort of just an average year or maybe above average year? The Bulls are going to have a really, really, really difficult decision to make whether or not they can play it out in free agency. They want to re-sign him to a long-term deal. So I don't know, man.
Which is why I've been harping this whole time about why, like, I don't care. Oh, good, they got the team option in year two. Yeah, damn right they better have gotten that team option. Even still, that puts them in an uncomfortable situation a year from now. Everybody's excited to see how Jabari fits into this young core in 2018-19. Cool. Let's fast forward to next summer when the Bulls are staring this decision in the face, and we'll see how we all feel about it. That's why I say overall it was still a bad idea, because even if Parker plays okay and isn't as much of a misfit as we are worried about him being, they're still facing another ugly money decision a year from now, and they could have avoided that entirely. And just to go back and wrap up with the whole OKC comparison, Mike, they drafted 3 superstars back to back to back and got really lucky there, and that rarely happens. And they, unfortunately, were only able to keep one of those 3. Going back, do you think the Thunder front office would change their mind if they had the opportunity? No, I think we'd rather not have KD, Westbrook, and Harden. I think we'll take this draft rewind in a different direction. No, get out of here. Are you kidding me? They would absolutely take those guys again if they knew the players they would turn into. They may have decided to keep Harden over Serge Ibaka had they known the player that Harden would turn into, but that's not the draft decision. And I just, you know, it's an interesting comparison to make, but I think on the whole, it's not exactly telling of the situation the Bulls are in.
Ownership changed in Oklahoma City. I think, what was it, 2014 or 2015, a new ownership group came in. I look at that, and those guys, like, you talk about wealth as far as the ownership goes and the willingness to spend. They're one of the most wealthy ownership groups in professional sports. So you talk about the luxury tax that they're in right now and having the highest payroll ever in the NBA.
Well, they did just get some of that off their books with the Melo trade.
True. But they were willing to spend that. Had they had to do that, they were willing to spend that. And my point here being is there's talk that if the ownership group had changed earlier before they made the James Harden deal, they would have been willing to pay him and he would have stayed in Oklahoma City.
Yeah.
So to me, you look at that too, it's like it's up to ownership at one point too to decide whether or not you're going to spend on some of these stars should they turn into it. You look at Wendell Carter Jr., you look at Lauri Markkanen, the two guys that they drafted. Should those guys turn into stars, you would hope that the Bulls would invest long-term in those guys to keep him around and not lose him, sort of like the way Oklahoma City did when they didn't want to pay Kevin Durant. He wanted to go somewhere else, and when they didn't want to pay James Harden. All right, let's get to the last voicemail here. This one comes from Phil from the 312.
Hey, Jordan and Matt. This is Phil calling from Chicago. Just a big fan of the podcast. Wanted to let you guys know. Tune in every time that I get a chance. But I just really wanted to hint on the whole Jabari Parker signing. I know everybody is freaking out about it. Some people say he's not proven to make 20 mil. You know, it is what it is at that point. But in the grand scheme of things, you really have to look at it from this perspective. GuardPax basically said that they were going to get younger and more athletic. What was that, 2 years ago? And funny thing is, they actually did what they said, getting rid of some bad contracts with Dwayne Wade and, you know, getting rid of the problem with Jimmy Butler. But bringing in guys like Jabari, Zach LaVine, Chris Dunn, who else? Chandler Hutchinson, Wendell Carter, studs, Lauri Markkanen, stud. But you just got to really look at it. Like, if they're not producing, they can just get rid of five more guys. This is a young team, and they're building a young core. I honestly – I'm not the biggest GuardPax supporter, but I can see the directions they're taking. They're basically just accumulating assets on the fly, which is young players. Let them develop, which is one thing I pretty much can say that they didn't do in the past with some other guys. Really was kind of mad about the whole Doug McDermott trade. I felt like he should have been a Bull to this day. He just didn't get the opportunities or the right sets to be effective. But on the back end, you guys really have to look at it from that perspective that they are generating young talent. So that's all I pretty much have to say.
Thanks for the call, Phil. I think Phil brings up a point that a lot of the hashtag FireGuardPaxers don't want to hear. But I think it's valid. And he's tempered in his optimism, as I am, as I think you are as well, Jordan. But when it comes to the all right, like give a little bit of credit where it's due kind of philosophy when it comes to this Bulls front office that a lot of people want to see replaced. They, a couple of years ago, made themselves look so utterly stupid by saying, we're going to get younger and we're going to get more athletic.
But we did want to get younger and we do want to get more athletic.
And then they went out and spent a truckload of money on Dwayne Wade and Rajon Rondo. So, you know, Monkey say, monkey don't do, basically, is what you had there. Monkey do opposite. Monkey say, monkey do opposite. And everybody laughed in their faces and said, are you kidding me? You just lied to our faces, or you forgot 2 seconds later what you just said the plan was and then did the opposite of the plan. So preface this credit with that, yeah. And I think what Phil is trying to say here is that, yeah, they made a big oops where they lied to us about what the plan was or changed the idea of what the plan was. But now, the whole quote-unquote younger and more athletic thing, the Bulls, assuming that at some point in the near future you replace Wendell Carter Jr., kicking Robin Lopez out, their starting five is going to be 24 and younger. 24, 23, 23, 21, 19. Younger, definitely. More athletic? Well, two of your starting five collectively have three ACL tears, but you hope that that athleticism is still there generally across the board with this young core. I think Phil's right. It's not like we're saying, oh my gosh, this Bulls young core is going to be competing for the Eastern Conference Finals in a season or two. Let's not, you know, let's pump the brakes. But at least after a gigantic misdirection with the Wade and Rondo signings, the front office is actually doing what they said they were setting out to do, which is getting younger and more athletic.
But we did want to get younger, and we do want to get more
pretty
athletic.
Pretty much hit it on all points. And, like, I mean, you can temper your expectations as far as what younger and more athletic means. They certainly got younger, more athletic. Like, you hope, you cross your fingers that Zach LaVine stays healthy, that he doesn't skip a beat as far as athleticism goes, then fine. Like, I'm cool with saying that they got younger and more athletic. I think the one worry is about Parker's two knees and whether or not those are going to hold up. Did hear an interesting point, though, about his knee, and it was asked on 670 The Score when he was interviewed, is what exactly did they do to those ACLs? Was there any cartilage damage, which I think worries a lot of team doctors and GMs because of the longevity? If your cartilage is already deteriorating, then you start to get that bone-on-bone grind on an ACL, and that's when you're talking about a full knee replacement. I know that some of these things because my dad has had two ACL surgeries and a knee replacement. So when you're talking about a basketball player, you look at that, and he said he had no cartilage damage, and he said that's why the Bulls were intrigued. That made them more seal the deal than anything else. So that's good news about Jabari Parker's two ACLs and no player ever having that. To know that there's no real cartilage damage there is good, is basically a good sign for Parker. And people have brought up his weight too, like, man, the guy's big. The guy's a big dude. Like, his weight being at, what, 250, 260, and people saying that he needs to be back down to 230, I think that's just more opinionated than anything else. If Parker can get up and down the floor and he can body guys, then his weight isn't really a concern to me. So I look at that. I look at younger, more athletic. You're right about all of those things. So I can't complain either, and I don't think fans necessarily can if they wanted the Bulls to go younger and more athletic. I know that they spent still just about as much money as they spent on Wade and Rondo, but you got a core of guys that are under 24 years old. Can't be too mad about that.
No. I think, you know, I think Phil is doing us all a service here, because I can't constantly just be falsely and irresponsibly known as like the Gar Pax lover of this podcast, because I am certainly not. And I feel like,
are you going to play devil's advocate?
There has started to be this growing perception that I'm some Gar Pax staunch defender, because I occasionally point out things that they actually follow through on or do well, because nobody seems willing to do that ever. So it's like, all right, fine, I'll be that guy. So thank you, Phil, for also providing some voice of reason to say, hey, they've certainly made their mistakes, but when it comes to the whole younger and more athletic thing, regardless of how much faith you have in this collection of young pieces, that part at least seems to be coming through right now. So take that for what it's worth.
Are you going to play devil's advocate?
Well, that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. If you guys want to hear the reaction from the Marcus Smart signing and also the quick reaction from San Antonio as well, we'll be playing those at the end of this episode, so stay tuned. Both reactions from Boston, the local experts there at Locked On Celtics, and also the local experts over at Locked On Spurs. So we'll be getting to both of those at the end of this episode. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. That's tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. 331-979-1369. If you want to be a part of the text message and voicemail line, you can do that there. Interact with us wherever you're listening to the show, whenever you're listening to the show. Drop us a voicemail or a text message with your questions or reaction. 331-979-1369. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. Be back on Monday with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, have a wonderful weekend, Bulls Nation. We are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com, part of FanRag Sports.
I love Derrick Rose.
That's a very valid point.
Hey, what's up? It's Sean Woodley, the host of Locked On Raptors, and holy crap, the Raptors have traded for Kawhi Leonard, a deal that sends DeMar DeRozan, Jakob Poeltl, and a first-round pick protected in 2019, 1-20, to the Spurs for Kawhi Leonard and Danny Green. And this is obviously very big. The Raptors are making an enormous gamble with this move. The Raptors have been sort of fancying themselves a real relevant franchise for the last few seasons after being absolutely irrelevant for 20 plus years. And this is them taking a bet with Masai Ujiri leading the charge, that they are going to be able to keep Kawhi Leonard beyond next season. And even if they don't, there are reasons why this works out for the Raptors as well. But overall, this is a bet by the Raptors that they can keep Kawhi Leonard around and convince him that this is the place that he wants to be for his next contract, even though he has said all along that he wants to go to LA with when he becomes a free agent at the end of 2019. So we'll see about that, but the Raptors are betting big here. This is a big deal for the Raptors because, you know, they're moving on from DeMar DeRozan, who is a franchise cornerstone. I have vouched that he should have his jersey retired and have a statue built tomorrow. He is, you know, I know people kind of around the league view him maybe with, you know, not the most high praise or whatever, but DeMar DeRozan is a legend in Toronto. He's a self-made all-star who went from being just like a pretty much a slasher and a dunker into being a fully well-rounded offensive player who, you know, he had his flaws, of course, and his flaws are eventually, I think, what led to him being dealt, because his flaws are essentially what were the downfall of the Raptors in the playoffs the last few seasons. You know, against the Cavs this year, when they got swept for the second time in a row against them, he was benched in Game 3 down the stretch as the Raptors made a big comeback. He got ejected from Game 4, and that's kind of sad that his last moment with the Raptors is either a benching in Game 3 or an ejection in the Game 4 after playing so poorly, because he's an all-time Raptor. He will have his number retired, and I can't imagine a bigger ovation than the one he will get when he returns to Toronto with the Spurs next season. But overall, this is a great deal for the Raptors. It's a big gamble, of course, but it does a couple things. First of all, they give up Jakob Poeltl, who is not OG Anunoby or Pascal Siakam. That is a big deal. OG and Pascal, I think, are the two highest upside prospects on the team, and I was convinced that one of those guys was going to be heading to San Antonio in a Kawhi Leonard trade. That is not the case. They are both here for whatever happens after Kawhi Leonard's first season with the Raptors, whether or not he stays. You know, those guys are going to be here long-term, and that is a big win for the Raptors. They're towing the line here a little bit with this bet. Also, it kind of frees up some money going forward. If Kawhi ends up leaving and DeMar is no longer on the books, the Raptors are sitting there with a lot of flexibility, a ton of open money where they can take on contracts attached to assets to sort of recoup some of what they've given up in order to get Kawhi, and over the last couple of seasons as they've been in kind of win-now mode, and they can pivot quickly to a rebuild. They can move off Kyle Lowry and Serge Ibaka, who will be expiring contracts at the end of this season, and they can sort of reset a little bit. A rebuild that was probably coming anyway, in theory. This move might expedite that a little bit and maybe make it a 1 year from now they do a rebuild instead of two or three, and it kind of gives the Raptors a very easy pivot point to get out of this era and into something new. And I think that's good. I think that's a nice thing to have, as opposed to sort of hanging on too long and doing the thing that, say, the Hawks have done, or maybe the Grizzlies are about to do, where they don't quite accept that they have to rebuild and they kind of let it drag out and they don't get max value for their guys. The Raptors have a clear pivot point, and if it doesn't work this year with Kawhi Leonard and he moves on, the Raptors can easily go into some sort of new era where they're building around OG Anunoby, Pascal Siakam, Fred VanVleet, DeLon Wright, and these guys who were really good this season. Maybe not star players or franchise cornerstones in the future, but they're nice players to have, and then that'll be the next era of the Raptors. But considering where they're at, considering sort of how they got a little bit stale with the fan base the last few seasons, considering just all of the pressures on Masai Ujiri to make a big move to try to get a superstar on this team, this is not a team that's going to sign a free agent superstar. This is a team that has to trade for one, and, you know, considering their assets, considering that they would have been outgunned for a regular superstar by teams like Boston and Philly, it makes sense that the Raptors did this trade to get a guy who, in Kawhi Leonard, who is a top five player, an MVP candidate when he's healthy and playing, to get him on the team. You know, this is the best way for the Raptors to go about this, and if they can keep him beyond this year, it is an absolute grand slam of a deal for the Raptors. I have a lot more on this deal, all the different ramifications of it, on Locked On Raptors, so please check it out on the iTunes feed, and thank you for listening.
John Corral is here from Locked On Celtics. Marcus Smart has agreed to a four-year deal, $52 million to return to the Boston Celtics. Might seem like a little bit more than the market dictated, but it was about what Boston offered in an extension prior to the season. So this is about where they valued him. It's less than Marcus Smart wanted, so it's a good deal for all sides. Basically, for Marcus Smart, once Atlanta did the Jeremy Lin deal, Chicago did the Parker deal, and Sacramento clearly was not into overpaying for him to lure him away as a restricted free agent, things started to point to a return. The question was, would it be a qualifying offer signing or some sort of longer-term deal? And once the Kawhi Leonard deal was done with Toronto and there wasn't any sort of potential trade between Boston and San Antonio, this deal got done quickly. For Marcus Smart, he is a unique player with unique value to the Boston Celtics. He can guard 1 through 5 for them. We've seen him switch onto fives and hold his ground when they try to post him up. So the Celtics value him in their highly switchable defense. He is a key player in their defensive scheme. So I know Marcus Smart is excited to be back in Boston. The Celtics, Brad Stevens, Danny Ainge have said they wanted him back. They are excited to have him back. But this is also a key point here, a tradable contract for the Boston Celtics. They didn't have on their books a deal in that $12 to $13 million range that they could use in a superstar type trade to match salaries. So having Marcus Smart at that number over the next 4 years gives them that one player who has value that teams may want and has a good tradable contract that they could throw in with maybe some of their younger players and picks to facilitate a bigger deal. So there is, on a team-building perspective, a value to Danny Ainge to giving Marcus Smart that kind of money. So even if you think it might be an overpay, there is significant value to the Celtics front office to have that kind of contract on the books. It's also interesting to see how they will structure this contract. There has been some buzz about them giving him a front-loaded contract that descends in value over time, because they will need to avoid the repeater tax. They have not been a taxpayer until this upcoming season, most likely. So they will probably try to structure this contract weirdly so they can avoid the tax in one of the upcoming 2 or 3 years to push off a potential repeater tax for as long as they possibly can. For Marcus Smart, though, 4 years to return to Boston is a good thing, and the Celtics are running it back. They are going to basically bring back everybody except for a couple of guys around the fringes, which is essentially what Danny Ainge said he would do. So Marcus Smart returns 4 years, $52 million. Celtics set to go for the upcoming season.